speakers of the famous forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
Welcome to the 2-4, the MontrealBias.com. I'm Zach Vinas, and along with me, as 90% of the time, my good co-host, Sean O'Neill. Good afternoon, Sean. Good evening,
good,
I suppose.
Good afternoon, yeah. It's our...
We're into the evening hour.
We are into the evening hour. Second to last podcast, likely, before the trade deadline, so it should be an interesting one.
Yeah, and there's... as we're going to record this, the first news of... some moves are starting to happen today. You said Dominic Moore, former Canadian. Dominic Moore just moved for a second-round pick, right?
Second-round pick to the San Jose Sharks, so a late second-round pick at that.
So that'll speak to a little bit of one of the questions we have coming up inside the opening 20. But before we get into the hockey, let's address the fact, both you and I, huge baseball fans, and more so than even fans of the game of baseball, Montreal Expos fans, and not but a couple hours ago, we learned of the passing of one of the all-time greatest members of the Expos, and one of the great catchers in baseball history, and a Montreal icon, a Montreal legend, Gary Carter, passed on. And so I thought we'll just get into that for a couple minutes before we get into the hockey. What are your thoughts on Gary Carter and what he meant to Montreal? In the only sport Montreal ever embraced fully outside of hockey.
Yeah, we'd certainly be remiss if we didn't mention Gary Carter. Obviously, we'll be focusing on hockey today, but like you said, a Montreal icon. And the name of the website is not the Habs Bias, it's the Montreal Bias. And, you know, not quite up there with, I guess, Lafleur and Béliveau and Richard, but definitely occupies a special place in the hearts and minds of the city. And you know, his name hangs from the rafters of the Bell Center. And you know, when the news started coming in over the past couple of months, I think we all knew it was only a matter of time, unfortunately. But it's sad to see him go, and it's you know, he was his love for the game was infectious, and just seeing the outpouring on Twitter and on Facebook and all over the media and the social media, it reminds you of what baseball used to mean in this city and what the Expos did mean to Montreal at one point in time.
Yeah, I got home, I changed out of my work attire, threw on my Expos t-shirt, and...
Yeah, I got mine on as well. It's a sad day for...
It is, it really is.
...any Montreal sports fan.
Gary Carter, I mean, both you and I a little bit younger than the era of Carter, though we did get to see in our time Gary Carter play as a member of the Expos in his second round. And, you know, it's just, as you said, we knew it was coming, I think, with news over the course of the past couple months. But I was listening to TSN 990 before I left today, and Mitch Melnick broke the news. And still, you know, it got to that point that you're like, he meant something when baseball meant something in Montreal. And one of those players who I think meant more than just the game he played, and was really a representative of not just baseball in Montreal, but Montreal as a city and the culture that was there. And we'll be missed. Raise a toast to the great Gary Carter.
Well said.
And on that note, let's jump into our opening 20. Question one this week, in a week that wasn't so ugly, considering where we were even a few days ago. I mean, the Habs are no closer to the playoffs. In fact, maybe a little further than last we spoke, but still. Number one, were Habs fans wrong to cheer when Chara took a puck to the face against the Bruins? We'll say last night, recording this on Thursday, the Wednesday night game against the Bruins. Were the Habs fans really in the wrong for cheering that?
No, not at all. I mean, listen, it'd be one thing if he was lying motionless on the ice like, mm-hmm. like Michael Irvin was when he got booed by Philadelphia Eagle fans, but he took a puck to the face. I think everyone knew that it, you know, it stings, but it wasn't a critical situation, and obviously he's not...
It didn't break his neck, you might say.
Yeah, exactly. So Char's always going to be public enemy number one in Montreal, and you know, I think it was almost good-natured in a sense. It was mean-spirited, but everyone kind of realized that, okay, he took a puck to the face. It's kind of funny to cheer.
No, that's precisely
it. He's a giant. He'll be fine. I don't find it remotely offensive.
No, and I find there's too many people who, and I'm not alone on this. In fact, Steph Darwish, one of our writers, wrote today in the morning after. It's enough. Montreal Canadiens fans take enough of this BS of we're supposed to, you know, oh, we're classless or something. Come on. Sports are, and hockey particularly, things get a little violent sometimes. Nobody was questioning when White was out there swinging away last night whether anyone should be cheering for the fact that some guy's wailing on another guy's face. Where, you know, the guy took a puck to the face. Probably one of the strongest, toughest guys in the NHL. Everyone knows the history between not just the Bruins and the Canadiens, but particularly Chara and this version of the Canadiens. So I think it's absolutely ridiculous that anyone would call it classless. Was it something you want to see every day, fans cheering for blood when some guy takes a puck in the face? No, but this is Zdeno Chara, public enemy number one in Montreal, who got hit and was bleeding and was clearly going to be fine. So it's just a little bit of rivalry fun. I think everyone likes to a little bit overreact when it comes to trying to tell Habs fans how to behave. That was just a bit of fun. And yes, Chara's probably got a bruise this morning, but nothing more. Everyone, let's move on. And let's move on to number two.
Number two, Rick Nash might be on the market. What would you be willing to give up for him, hypothetically speaking?
Not what it would take. Is my answer. Yeah. That I just, with his giant contract, because it's not an easy contract. It would take a very significant chunk out of your cap space. And on top of that, we all know the asking price is going to be astronomical.
As it should be.
And no, precisely. I mean, this is a franchise player, no doubt. But I have to assume that any conversation between Montreal and Columbus, if that were to happen, would have to involve the names Patches and PK. And those are two of the guys I've said are essentially unmovable, and I stand by that in this scenario. There's no way you ship two homegrown that you can build around out for a guy who's going to bring with him a hefty contract. And on top of that, I mean, not to say I think Max Pacioretty is going to have a better career than Rick Nash. In fact, I don't probably believe that to be the case. But at this point in Patch's young career, he's actually having a better season than Nash is on a bad Columbus team. But Patches is on a bad Montreal team. So no, there's nothing that I'd be willing to give up that it would take to get Nash.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, part of me, you see Rick Nash there, and he's, you know, one of the top 15 forwards in the league. He's a 6'4" power forward who scores 40 goals every season, and he's exactly the type of player we've been looking for 20 years. So there's always that instinct to make a move. But like you said, I just don't think the timing's right. The pieces aren't there without really depleting your team. Look, Nash is a great player. I would love to see him in Montreal, but like you said, for what it would take to get it done, it just doesn't seem like the wise move given where the team is. They're not one Rick Nash away from, you know, going to the Stanley Cup Finals type thing.
And most certainly.
I think, you know, ideal situation, you like to make a move for him, but you just realize that, you know, the chips aren't going to fall that way this time.
Exactly. All right, last night, Wednesday night, the Montreal Canadiens, in what I think you and I probably agree, one of the most entertaining, if not the most entertaining games this season, lost in a shootout to the rival Bruins. Yet again, not a good record for the Habs in overtime, and especially not in the shootout. So, all things considered, should the shootout be practiced more by teams?
I don't know. Obviously, there's a skill set involved, but I do tend to think that there's a lot of luck involved in the shootout. And it's such a small sample size that I kind of think, you know, previous seasons, Montreal's been pretty good in the shootout. This year, they're not so great. I kind of think it's one of those things where teams sort of regress to the mean and you're going to have fluky seasons, but I think it's more of just a fluky sample size thing than anything. I can't imagine it's because, you know, they're not equipped enough to perform in the shootout.
I can't disagree with you, and, you know, I'll just play devil's advocate on this one. The fact is, the shootout matters much more than I think we like to admit as hockey fans. I like the shootout. I'm not completely opposed to it, and it's fun hockey to watch. And you think back to that game against Pittsburgh about a week ago, where it went 8 rounds, and that's very exciting stuff. But at the same time, sometimes I think we dismiss the shootout too easily, particularly clubs dismiss it. And so they're not going to work at a point that if Montreal had success in the shootout this season, they would be a playoff team right now. If you reverse their record, they would certainly be a team in the hunt for the playoffs, if not right in there. I don't know the exact numbers, but there's something to be said, I think, for the fact that that is a skill, that is something that you can bring to the table, and I actually am a little bit surprised the teams haven't started going after that one player whose sole role is to generally score in the shootout, because generally, if you get one goal in the shootout, there's a very good chance you're going to win it, and I'm surprised, considering the way the NHL is now, and with those extra points being so valuable, there's nobody who's bothered to go and the shootout specialist still doesn't exist in the NHL, and I guess I'm just trying to say that kind of surprises me.
Fair enough. Number four, sort of speaking of the shootout, is it time for the NHL to reassess its points scheme?
I think it is. I think it is, not because I'm super upset at the way it is, and I don't mind the shootout, but because look back to this most recent baseball season, how exciting the comeback by the St. Louis Cardinals, and the same could be said of the Tampa Bay Rays, the American League East. Those comebacks are virtually impossible. I mean, for all intents and purposes, what the Devils did after the All-Star break last year should have got them into the playoffs. Realistically, it should have got them there. But because of the way the points are given out, and because of how many three-point games there are in the NHL, it's just impossible. There's so many teams that now reached the All-Star break and have to say, there's no way it's going to happen for us. And I don't think that's the way you want your sport to go. I think you always want there to be hope that if we go on an unbelievable run, like the Devils did last year, then we'll get in. And the math, the way it works now, it just doesn't happen for teams.
Yeah, I used to be dead set against it, because I'm, you know, tend to be sort of a traditionalist when it comes to these things, but I've crossed over on this one. It makes more sense to have every game worth 3 points. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense that some games are worth more than others. And the standings are a mess as a result. You know, 24 out of the 30 teams are, you know, hovering around 500 right now in terms of points. And I think it makes a lot more sense that you get 3 points for a win in regulation, 2 points for a win in overtime of the shootout, and a point if you lose in extra time. I think that's the most sensible solution. And if the only defense we have against that is that, well, you've always gotten 2 points for a win, that's not really a good
argument. No, because a long time ago we completely destroyed the mark of what is a good season and what isn't. I mean, 100 points used to mean something. Now, you know, 100 points is very achievable. All right, we're going to move on. Number five. Can both Patches and Cole, sitting at 24 and 22 goals respectively, hit the 30-goal mark, which is a little bit bizarre considering no two Habs have done that in a single season in some time now, and in this absolute awful season for the Canadians by all respects, we got two guys who could flirt with 30. You think they can do it?
I think they can, which you said kind of weird. It seems like such a lost season. You wouldn't think there'd be any highlights, but they both, you know, I'd have to calculate it exactly if they're on pace, but obviously they're within striking distance.
Patches is certainly on pace, and
Patches
Cole's
is certainly
within
on
striking.
Pace, and if Cole's not, he's, you know, just needs to pick up one goal or two down the stretch, and they're both red hot right now, and I kind of think they're going to do it. And like you said, it's a weird little thing that you wouldn't expect to happen this year out of all years, but I kind of think they might both hit that 30-goal plateau.
I'm with you on that. When Patches put his 24th in against Boston, and then apparently I developed a Boston accent to say that word as well, and then Cole with his nifty 22nd of the season, that I really thought, holy crap, we could have two 30 goal scorers, which, you know, if somehow some fortune teller at the beginning of the season told me nothing else but had this one little insight into the Habs season and said two of your guys will hit the 30 mark, I'd think, all right, we're cooking with fire at this point. This is going to be a very good team. But in this weird season that's been, we might have two guys who hit 30, which hasn't happened in a long time, and yet still be a, well, miserable team.
And just quickly, it actually speaks to something I've been meaning to bring up for a while now, but not to make any excuses, but if you look at the goal differentials in the league, which, you know, most people agree is a pretty good barometer of how good your team is. If you look at the goal differentials in the Eastern Conference, at least Montreal, I believe, sits 7th or 8th or 9th, somewhere around that playoff line. You know, which would indicate they're a better team than their record suggests. And they haven't quite gotten some breaks this year, and those things tend to even out from season to season. But I think this team is probably closer to being a playoff squad than we realize, at least based on the pure numbers. You know, this is a team you would more often than not expect to sit on the playoff bubble at the very least.
It's a bad luck season. I completely agree with that. All right, hit me with the next.
Up next, number six, what is the best rivalry in the NHL right now?
I'd like to say Montreal-Boston, because I'd be hard-pressed to think that any other team sitting in such polar positions shouldn't be able to put up a game like what happened on Wednesday night. And it's clear that the standings don't matter to the Canadiens and the Bruins when they play one another. It's clear that either team can come out on top, and it's clear they don't like each other. Great rivalry, but I have to give my edge quickly. The Canucks and the Blackhawks is still the best rivalry in the NHL right now.
That's my vote as well, because just, you know, the fact that they're both Stanley Cup contenders and there's a lot of bad blood there. And
lots.
It's always great hockey when they play. So yeah, they'd get my vote as well.
All right, number seven. Which Hab UFA, unrestricted free agent for those not in the know, would you most like to see stick around? Because I think we should shop all of them if possible, because usually they don't come back. But if there's one guy you want to keep of the UFAs, and just to quickly go over them, they're Kostitsyn, Gill, Darche, and Moen are the big four on the trade block. Who do you keep, if any?
There's one name I believe you left off, and I'm going to surprise myself and probably a lot of people with this answer, but I wouldn't mind seeing what we could get out of Chris Campoli for one more year.
Are you kidding? I forgot about him because I forget he's on the team.
Yeah, I
what
know.
What the hell are you talking about?
The guy got injured 20 minutes into the game, and he always impressed me in his other stops in the NHL.
No, he's past his prime, dude.
I don't know. I think, I mean, he's not going to cost anything. And I think if you bring him back at a really low salary to be your sixth or seventh defenseman, I wouldn't mind seeing what he could give you for one more season.
I strangely wouldn't mind seeing all except Campoli, I think, come back. I don't get where you're coming from there. If I had to choose one, I don't think they should all come back, but if we re-signed any of them in the next 2 weeks before the deadline, I wouldn't be opposed. And that includes Kostitsyn, because as we've said on this podcast before, Kostitsyn's strangely manages to be both a player who has no consistency to his game and season after season is one of the most consistent guys at a reasonable price, so I don't mind seeing Kostitsyn come back. If I had to choose, though, Hal Gill's the guy I would take for two more seasons, however many it is before he retires. Hal Gill, I've come to really like the guy. I've come to really appreciate what he does, not just on the penalty kill, but as a leader. And I know he likes being in Montreal, so I know it wouldn't cost anything to bring Hal Gill back. So unless you're going to get a return that impresses you, I think you can give Gill a contract that keeps him around, and I don't think that's a bad thing. So Gill is my choice on that one. Hit me with question number eight, sir.
Number eight, should Brad Marchand have been suspended for his hit last night? Again, we're recording this on Thursday.
Yes, because Brad Marchand doesn't seem to learn that he should stop doing that. If this was a one-off incident from a Bruin with a little bad blood, and Emelin is a guy who said he won't fight because he has a piece of metal in his face, which is, you know, reason enough not to fight. But if it's anyone else, and particularly not a Bruin, perhaps, then no. This is maybe you're just trying to agitate the kid a little bit. But come on, how many times does Marchand have to do this move that is just him ducking out of the way? Screw that. Brendan Shanahan, you've already talked to him about it. At this point, he's a repeat offender on that move. Give him a couple games. Clearly, the whole point of suspension, is it not, is to deter anyone from doing this going forward. Brad Marchand, you can't deter from doing that. I say he should have been suspended.
Yeah, if you're going to do it on any grounds, it would be the repeat offender thing, but you know, to be honest with you, as much as I'd love to say yes, just because, you know, I can't stand Boston, it wasn't a hit that caused me to jump out of my chair.
No, it wasn't, but come on, that's only because it didn't work out for him, right?
Yeah, there may be some truth
to
that.
No, Brad Marchand isn't learning, and at some point he's going to do it again and hurt somebody. I don't think you've got to, at some point, deliver a message to this idiot.
You may be right. I would lean no, but I certainly wouldn't be upset if he got a game or two.
I just mostly wanted to get a little fired up about something.
Fair enough.
All right. Question number 9. I like this one, even though it's a little bit out there. Would you trade Carey Price for Patrick Kane?
The reason we're throwing this out is that Jeremy Roenick chimed in recently on the Blackhawks struggle, saying it might be time for them to move Patrick Kane for a franchise goalie. No, I would not. There are probably only 5 or 6 players in the league I would trade straight up for Carey Price. And Patrick Kane, as great as he is not one of them. Now, if they want to give us Jonathan Toews, I would do that. But for Kane, as much as I like Kane, as exciting as he is, to me, he's not one of the top, 5 or 6 forwards in the league, and I would say no.
I'm with you on that. No, because, and also I don't like Patrick Kane, and this stems back to the incident in Buffalo with the taxi driver. And, I don't think Kane's electric enough to deal for Price. But I am interested, you got me thinking, who are the guys that you would consider moving Carey Price for? Clearly Sidney Crosby.
A healthy Sidney Crosby, yeah. Obviously. A Jonathan Toews, Steven Stamkos.
Stamkos?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think you can get a perennial 50-goal scorer, you'd have to do it.
No, I'm not going to disagree.
I think a guy like Shea Weber, you'd have to think about. A guy like Drew Doughty, you'd have to think about. But it's a pretty short list.
See, on the back end, I wouldn't do it. It would only be forwards, and I think the three you mentioned are the three that I would go for. There's no other goalie I would take in exchange for him, because either they're on the wrong end of their career in terms of getting older, or not quite at Price's level. I'd be hard-pressed, and I'm sure people have a few suggestions. Others, I'm sure I could extend the list to 5, but a franchise goalie is hugely valuable, and I think in the last couple weeks, Carey has reminded us exactly how valuable he can be and how great he can be. I'd say there's 5 guys max, and you name the 3 off the top of my head that I can see dealing for. Other than that, I'd be hard-pressed to want to make that trade any other way.
And finally, trade deadline approaching, obviously, which team is, so to speak, one player away from winning the cup?
One player away. Boston's the defending champ, so we have to assume they've got the pieces in order, right?
Yeah, that's a fair assumption, even if they haven't been great lately.
I think the Chicago Blackhawks are a goalie away, perhaps not one player away, not one of these guys you could make a trade at the deadline away. Really, once again, though, I'm going to go with the Canucks are one player away. The right trade away, the Canucks are once again probably the favorites. The Detroit Red Wings, I would like to say that, but I don't know who you'd put on the Detroit Red Wings that would make them better. Them, you just have to hope it all holds out, because there's a ton of talent there. The team I see making the biggest leap or bound from one player is the Canucks.
And what would that player be? Someone with a bit of sandpaper?
Travis Moen with a little more talent, so I don't know who he is out there, but that's what I see that player being.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the New York Rangers, who...
You think they're a player away?
I think so. I think they can make a run, especially if Henrik goes on one of his streaks. But they still lack a little bit of punch offensively. And if they can get a top 6 forward, and I'm not sure if that player is out there for the right price. But
if any team has the pieces in place, though, I think it's the Rangers. To make the move for the one player, I mean. They kind of got what they can trade to get him back, no?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, like I said, if they get a guy who can pump in some goals and go on a bit of a streak, I really like that Rangers team. And they're going to be fun to watch, but they're not a perfect team. So I think they're certainly on the market. And I think if they can get a top 6 forward, they're really going to be in business.
I'm with you on this. I agree. And that's a completely reasonable argument. But at the same time, I was watching the game the other night. Rangers game. And it occurred to me that this Rangers team is one of those teams that could finish in first place, and at the same time, if they get eliminated in the first round, I'm not going to be shocked. Is that unfair?
No, it's not, because they do seem to live on the edge quite a bit. They're not blowing teams out of the water, and anything can happen in the playoffs, and B, if they run into a red hot team, if Lundqvist is off his game just a little bit, if their goal scorers go dry, no, it's not impossible that they could get they could get upset, but at the same time, I don't have a hard time seeing Henrik just, you know, going on one of those, you know, Jaeger, Kiprasov, Halak type runs and just almost single-handedly bringing them to the finals.
All right, you texted me the other day, and this to stay on the same topic, you texted me that it's not unreasonable to think that the Canadians are even a season away from being in the exact same position the Rangers are in building that kind of team. Can you get into that a little bit? Where do you see that happening?
Well, I look at that Rangers squad, and to me, if, you know, if Montreal's looking to build a competitive team, that's the blueprint right there. These are two teams that, I mean, Montreal last won the Cup in 93, New York last won in 94, and they've had pretty similar sort of franchise trajectories ever since, especially the last 5-6 years. They've both been, you know, perennial playoff teams, but usually the bottom half of the top eight. They've made some noise in the postseason, but obviously haven't, you know, advanced to the finals or anything like that. I just look at the Rangers team. What do you have? You have a franchise goalie, and, you know, Lundqvist, I think right now, this year, is the best goalie in the world, but him and Price are certainly comparable. And, you know, they've just surrounded them with a lot of nice talent. And, you know, I think you take a look at a guy like Callahan. I think him and, you know, Pacioretty are very comparable. I think PK could easily be a Girardi-quality defenseman. And, you know, if you have those pieces, the rest, as New York showed, you can sort of mix and match. And, I mean, the obvious counter argument to that is, yeah, well, the Rangers, each of the last two off seasons, they've signed the premier free agent of their group, being Gabrick and Richards. And, you know, Montreal's not going to be able to bring in two players of that caliber, obviously, but they also have some pieces around them that New York doesn't. So I think there's a blueprint there that these two teams remind, you know, Montreal and New York remind me, you know, they're very similar. So I think Montreal should sort of look in that direction if they're looking how to build around Price, because you want to build from the net out, obviously.
I couldn't agree more, actually. If there's one, you know, you're not going to be able to suddenly overnight do the Detroit Red Wings thing. I don't think Montreal's a city where you can do the Chicago Blackhawks thing, and they're in their own turmoil at this point. The New York Rangers are very, very comparable to the Canadiens. And as you alluded to, the pieces are similar in nature. You know, Lundqvist is, what, 28, 29 years old? So, you know, that's 5 years away for Carey Price.
Yeah.
And this is a team that last year barely got into the playoffs, has missed it a couple times in the last few seasons. Suddenly things are going right. And even with the exact team the Canadians have on the ice right now, and I'm, you know, some people might think I'm crazy for this, but I don't think there's as big a difference between the New York Rangers' current season and the Habs' current season as is indicated by where they are in the standings. Is there more of a difference between the Bruins and the Habs? Most certainly. The Bruins have a team that goes deep, that runs all the lines properly, that just seems to have it all figured out. The Rangers, like you say, they play on an edge. There's the nights that things go well for them, and they happen more often than not. And in Montreal right now, the nights that go poorly for them are happening more often than not. And to some degree, sure, there's a maturity, even in a guy like Lundqvist. There's talent in guys like Richards and, as you said, Gabrick. But at the same time, there's not a world of difference between the Rangers and the Canadiens right now. It comes down to a couple breaks here in the season, which turns you from a team that plays with suddenly so much confidence, as the Rangers clearly do at this point, and they exhibited that in their win over the Bruins the other night. Confident winning really creates more winning, and losing by that same standard creates more losing. I think that's the main line between the Rangers and the Habs at this point. Like you say, sure, there's a difference. Sure, there's a separation obvious by the standings, but at the same time, it's not as canyonous as some people might think.
Right, and do I think the Rangers are, you know, do I think that's necessarily a long-term blueprint? Maybe
no,
not.
No.
You know, I don't think the Rangers are going to be a perennial powerhouse in the East. But sometimes you just have to have one of those years where, like you said, everything clicks and these things take on a life of their own, and you get some momentum, especially in a especially in a market like New York or Montreal. And, you know, I think we all know Carey Price has that one just out of this world year that's coming at some point, the type of year that Henrik is having this year. So
he absolutely does.
I don't think
does.
It's inconceivable.
Let's get on Carey, because Carey's been amazing. Maybe not off and on throughout the season, but particularly the last couple weeks, Carey's reminded us exactly what he's capable of. If Habs fans have one thing to hang their hat on right now, it's what you just alluded to. Carey has that season in him, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
There's going to be that season when Price puts this team on his back, when he's absolutely the best goalie in the NHL, when it just continues to click from day one to day 82 of the season. And that's the season that, to some degree, Montreal has to be ready to cash in all their chips. And we don't know when it's going to come. He's, what, 24 years old? So let's say there's a six-year window at this point. At some point in that six-year window of Carey Price, between now and 30, and even goalies, perhaps 32, but I think that year is going to come now in the next 6 years, Montreal just has to be ready to jump on the fact that this might be the season Price puts you on his back.
Yeah, and that's the other side of the equation is, okay, if we can all agree that, you know, hopefully the season is coming, that's the reason for optimism. The flip side of that is it's a pretty short window.
Yep.
And the team has to, you know, you don't necessarily know that it's coming, but you have to capitalize on it and surround them with the right pieces. So that's the flip side of the equation, is Montreal better be damn ready to make sure that golden season for Price isn't wasted. You know, otherwise you're looking at, you know, Jose Theodore on the Habs circa 2002.
I think Price will have a better career than Josie, though.
Oh, I do as well, but I'm just, you know, Carey could have that MVP-type season that Jose did, and, you know, the team could still finish in eighth if the right pieces aren't surrounding him.
No, that's the fear, I think, for Montreal fans is when that comes, that'll be the case. And I mean, we're looking a little bit ahead, obviously, quite a ways ahead with that potential scenario to play itself out. But let's look at the immediate, what we're putting on the ice this season. The past week, and you and I talked about this in the last podcast, we reached a zen point. That was particularly after the game against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And then they went on a four-game winning streak, which I think brought a good number of people back into the belief that maybe this team is a playoff team. The loss against Carolina, as clearly illustrated in very obvious on our website from Pat Wallace, that if there was a game that you needed to win, it was against Carolina. They didn't. So now, for all reasonable purpose, they're not going to make the playoffs. Do you think Pierre Gauthier realizes that, or is he going to still try and save his job as we head to the deadline?
No, I think he realizes that it's over, and it was an interesting little streak. I did my best not to get sucked in, and it seems like...
How'd you do?
What's that?
How did you do not getting sucked
in? I did fine until the mini comeback against Carolina.
Okay, yep, me too.
And then I was,
me
I was
too.
Fully in for about a 15-minute span.
Well, it was completely believable there for a minute. It was like, holy shit, this team's building it. They're doing it. No.
You know, I enjoyed the winning streak, but I didn't buy in.
Not even at the Toronto 5-0. I was fun, and I live in Toronto.
Fun, but...
I love going out, and it was a great night, obviously, living in Toronto, destroying them like that. But no, it was Carolina suckered me in.
Yeah, but even I wasn't devastated after the loss, honest with you. You know, it seems like every week we come on the podcast, I'm like, all right, now it's officially over. Can we all agree that it's officially over? And then, you know, they have that last gasp, and then they fall back to earth, and then we say, okay, now it's officially over. But this team isn't making the playoffs, and for all the grief we've given Pierre Gauthier, I think he's a smart enough man to realize that. Now, whether he realizes that he's out of a job and whether he's forward-thinking enough to put the interests of the franchise above his own is a different question, but I do think he knows that, you know, this team isn't going to the postseason.
All right, I'm going to ask this question of Kyle coming up, and first I want to feel it to you. I know we've talked about it before, but every week brings a new scenario, and Ruutu's injury, I think we both agree, increases Kostitsyn's price to some degree. What is best-case scenario at the deadline for you in terms of what Gauthier could do for improving this club, either this season or just its general future?
Like we said, there's a lot of pieces that could be moved out, but it's extremely difficult to make a trade on the fly. It's trade deadline day when there's 30 different teams moving in 30 different directions. And I, first of all, I want to see the team trade for draft picks. I don't see the point of trading for replacement level players. So if you're not getting NHL level players in return, there's only players you can ship out. There's only so many players you can ship out. So I don't expect to see more than three players at the absolute most go out of town. And really, only
I think two is the ceiling. Yeah. To be
and
honest.
I think we've all settled on the two. I think Moen's as good as gone, and I think Gill is as good as gone.
The two guys I think I'd like to see come back the most.
Yeah, but they're also, I mean, you want to see them come back the most because they're arguably our two best pieces.
Yeah, you're right. They also bring you the most.
Exactly. Now, initially, I thought that a pair of first-round picks, one each for both players, wasn't out of the question. But given that Dominic Moore only netted a second-round pick in return, that changes things. That does change things. That being said, if you can get, you know, two second-round picks for this upcoming draft, and you end up having four picks in the top 60,
that's not bad.
That's not bad at all. Even if, you know, we all realize that anything after, let's say, the top 20 is a crapshoot, that gives you four shots at it to get an NHL player in return. So I think, you know, four picks in the top 60, that's not too bad at all.
I'd be happy with the two second rounders.
Yeah, as would I. And I think that's, you know, I think the market's kind of been set now by the Moore trade, and I think that's probably what we're looking at.
Is there any team you see being helped out off the top of my head? Like, I think Boston would fare the best, and we talked about this last week on the podcast. I think Boston would be probably served the best by getting Gill, simply because putting Chara and Gill on the penalty kill is just so intimidating.
Yeah.
What about Moen? Where do you see him going? Which team needs Moen the most, I guess?
Well, we sort of mentioned Vancouver a little bit earlier, and I think that's a somewhat logical fit. Like you said, they'd probably want someone who could pump in a few more goals than one can. But they do need that sort of physical blue-collar type player. So I think Vancouver makes a certain amount of sense.
I've seen Moen ending up in Chicago in my mind.
That would be a nice fit as well. It's not a team that really lacks in toughness, but they could use that experience.
But he fits the mold properly.
He does fit the mold properly. San Jose was mentioned as well, but you got to think they're out of the running.
They went and got their guy.
Yeah, they got their guy. So, Chicago's a good fit. I think Vancouver's a good fit, although he wouldn't be their first choice. Maybe the Kings would be interested. Maybe even a team like the Blues. I don't know.
The Blues are interesting. I think we all kind of forget about the fact that the Blues are sort of a cup contender at this point. And you gotta...
Yeah, I'd be hard-pressed to see them winning it, but I do forget, you know, every time I look at the standings, I'm like, oh yeah, the Blues are having a really good season. They're right up there in terms of points.
In comparing this to the Habs a couple seasons ago, so Halak's your goalie, and you've got to hope he goes on the run. I mean, they've got Elliott there as well, obviously, but Halak is the guy who I think scares people a little more and gives people the tendency to think St. Louis is a bit more of a cup contender because of what he did in Montreal. So you combine that with what Gill did in that playoffs, which was, I think, the first time Montreal fans really appreciate what Hal Gill can bring to the table. It wouldn't be stupid to think that maybe bringing Hal Gill with the Halak combo to try and do that with more around it than Montreal was able to do wouldn't be the worst idea.
No, I've been proven wrong by the Blues for a couple of seasons now. We've been hearing people say,
and I was too. I'm not just leaving you on this one. I agreed heartily when you said this.
You know, we'd been hearing people say, you know, watch out for the Blues. They've got a really nice young nucleus, and I'd look at their roster and I'd kind of shrug my shoulders and say, you know, maybe it's an 8th or 7th place team, but it never looked like a team on the rise to me. But obviously everything started to click. Hitchcock's done a great job, and the people who were saying that, they knew what they were talking about. There's a lot of nice young players there. Do I think they're going to win the Cup this year? No, but like you said, maybe Halak goes on a run, and I think Gill's probably a nice landing spot. St. Louis is probably a nice landing spot for Gill.
And Gill's a nice landing spot for St. Louis as well. You weren't wrong about that at first. All right, we're going to take a little break. We're going to talk to one of our contributors on the Montreal Bias. He chats with us in the forum, and this is the first time we're bringing him on the podcast, so we're excited about that. Kyle Roussel from Cowhide and Rubber, which obviously talks a little bit about baseball. We'll get into that as well, and then we'll come back. We'll take a look at the schedule ahead for the Habs. We'll hand out our three stars, and of course, everyone's favorite point, maybe not everyone's, but me and Sean's favorite part of the week, dropping a douche after this. Alright, so for the first time on the 2-4 on the MontrealBias.com, a contributor to our forum, and he writes at his site, cowhideandrubber.com, Kyle Russell, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Alright, we were just talking right before we started getting on here about the fact that news of Gary Carter's passing came just about a couple hours ago now. We're both baseball fans, and I guess from looking at your side, Cowhide and Rubber, clearly an Expos fan like myself through and through.
Absolutely.
Give us a little bit right off about, I was too young to ever see Gary Carter play, but give me a little bit your impression kind of a Gary Carter and what he meant to the Expos.
Gary Carter was definitely one of the larger-than-life personalities in the entire franchise's history, if not the poster boy for the franchise's existence. Just a guy that exuded joy, not only for baseball but for life. And my lasting memory of Gary Carter for sure was being at his last game as an Expo. I think it was in the 92 season. His last at bat late in the game, he hits a double off the wall. I was standing at the Big O way, way up in the nosebleeds. But man, oh man, that was just one of the best feelings, if not the best feeling I'd ever had at a Spurs game. And when news broke, I was just packing up at work, and what a sad way to end the day.
Yeah, no kidding. I was doing the exact same thing. I was headed out and got the news, and I mean, it was something that we kind of saw coming for a while, but I think as people who are Expos fans, having something like this happen, it just kind of reminds you of everything that was lost when the team left and how much the kid did mean to Montreal and baseball there, and how much baseball did actually have its place in the sports scene of Montreal at one point in time, even though, you know, it ended very sadly. There was a time when Gary Carter owned the city, and there was a time when Pierre Trudeau said, you know, he's glad he doesn't have to run against Gary Carter because he was just hugely popular. I think people forget a little bit how much the Expos and guys like Carter and even, Raines, Staub, Dawson meant to the city at a point.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there was a point in time in the 70s, even when the Canadians had their dynastic run with Guy Lafleur and Big Bird and Serge Livard, the Expos were just as big, if not bigger. I mean, they were outdrawing some of the biggest teams in baseball. They piled in a couple million people at the Big O during those years. It was just insanity. That's why they got called Nos Amours. Baseball fever had gripped Montreal big time in those days, and Gary Carter was the face of that charge. And so, as he said, you know, today's loss is a reminder of all the things baseball related that the city has lost, and it's just a really sad day for sports fans in this town.
Yeah, most certainly. I do want to switch gears, and we will move to hockey now, because I guess that is the point of this podcast, to discuss Canadians. So we've got the trade deadline coming up. What would you like to see? What do you think Pierre Gauthier should be doing at this point?
I'm glad you specified, because what I think he should do and what I think he will do are two different answers. What I think he should do is pretty simple. It's take the guys that are UFA and get what you can for them, whatever that may be. Now, we're not talking about moving superstars. You got Hal Gills and Chris Campolis, Travis Mullins, perhaps Kostitsyn, although I'd like to see the Canadians at least attempt to re-sign him. You have a crop of UFAs that teams might be interested in, that might net you on a good second-round pick, but second-round picks, third-round picks, that's the kind of thing I'm hoping Gauthier can get realistically. What I think he will do is maybe not trade all the guys he should keep a couple guys around in hopes of a playoff run that might still be in the offing, and moreover I don't expect draft picks in return. I would think the Canadians would go down the avenue of picking up, quote unquote, near NHL ready prospects, which, I think handcuffs and shortchanges the best guy in the organization in Trevor Timmons.
Now, with all this looming and all the names that are being thrown around, as you said, the UFAs are who you should be moving. Is there? We talked about this, Sean and I, earlier in First and Ten. Is there one or two, maybe, is there UFA on the team other than Kostitsyn that you wouldn't mind keeping on the Canadiens?
That's a good question. I guess there's a lot of them, I suppose, when you get down to it. I still like Hal Gill for what he brings to the power play and to the leadership core of the team. We know how painfully slow he is, and we know that he's not getting any quicker. But I think, next year in the right conditions, and if you get him to come back at an even further reduced rate, I don't think I would complain too much about having Hal Gill back. Same for Matthew Darche. I think he's playing out of his mind.
He is, indeed.
This past 4 or 5 days. Whether that's a blip or whether he sees his career in jeopardy and he's just trying to show everybody that he does have something left to give, he could be another guy that I wouldn't mind seeing back, though I think he can be replaced. And Mullen. Mullen's the other guy. So, good soldier through and through. But I think that after the year he's had offensively, that he might price himself out. Though I do like Travis Mullen a whole lot.
Yeah, I think it's as even I've noticed you've been mentioning on Twitter. It comes down to either you get these guys signed by the deadline, though, or you have to move them at that point. It's one or the other. You can't hold on to them hoping to re-sign them in the off season at that point. It's either get it done in the next couple weeks, or it doesn't get done at all, right?
I think I don't have the numbers on hand, but I would say that traditionally, when a guy goes USA, he's going UFA. He's testing the market, and he's not coming back. So, yeah, I mean, I hope that Canadiens management would have learned the lesson from 2009 when they let that whole Koivu Kovalev Komisarek class walk for nothing. If you think back to that team and what kind of picks those guys had brought back in return, it's mind-boggling. Now, of course, I understand that being the centennial, they were probably given marching orders to go for the cup no matter what. And even if that meant an eighth seed and being swept by the Bruins, at least they gave it the old college try. But, there was a valuable lesson to be learned there, and that is when you do have assets that can help your franchise's depth, not even just depth, but the core, by bringing back draft picks and youth, you really got to jump on those opportunities in a cap world, because they don't come around too often. So, as much as the Canadiens don't have giant bargaining chips going into the trade deadline, they do have some valuable pieces that could turn out to be some good future assets to the team.
Now, this is kind of pie in the sky and even maybe undesirable pie in the sky kind of stuff I'm going to throw at you. But obviously Rick Nash is the big name being bandied about right now. Would you have any interest, if you were the GM of the Canadiens, in even making a play at a guy like Nash?
Not really. Just simply because of the asking cost, the asking price. Now, I don't know what that is exactly, but I think it's safe to say you start with a Subban and a Pacioretty, and you add from there. And so I think you got the core of your team, or at least the youth core of your team, in trying to get a guy that, despite his skill and despite the fact that he's playing on a lousy team his entire career and thusly hasn't put up the numbers that you would expect, I think it's easy to get enchanted with guys on the other side of the fence. And so I would abstain. I would, if you ask me this question about any guy with a huge contract, I would probably say to not trade for those guys, because the cost is just too much. The Canadiens are not in the position asset-wise to deal for that type of guy, at least in my opinion. And I think you fill one hole, and I don't even think Rick Nash honestly fills a hole. They have Cole and Pacioretty, and for the moment they have Kostitsyn. those are your big scoring wingers. If we're going to have this conversation, I'd much rather it be about getting the big skilled center that they need.
Yeah, precisely. And to me, and as you say, you're completely right. If Montreal were involved in the conversation, it does start at Pacioretty and PK. And at that point, to get a guy back who's not your homegrown, so you're not going to ever get the hometown discount. Not to say Columbus did. They're paying Rick Nash a hefty sum. So you'd be taking on a very large contract when you've got, you'd immediately lose two of your key talents that you're supposed to be building on. I'm with you on this one. I don't see that being a trade that really there's any price that the Canadiens could pay that would make it worth it. And like you said, it's how long have we been talking about the big center? If you're not going to bring that in, I don't think it's worth spending, in the salary range of Scott Gomez / Rick Nash on something.
No, absolutely. I mean, I don't know what it will take before we learn our lesson about overpaying in trades and on the UFA market. If you want these types of franchise players, you have to draft them.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was the colossal mistake in trading a first rounder for Alex Tanguay. You know, lesson learned. Let's get real here and realize that these guys, if you want them, draft them, develop them, and treat them properly.
Yeah, exactly. All right, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, no, we'll definitely have you back, and we appreciate you contributing to the forum on themontrealbias.com and your site, one of my favorite reads, which is why we decided to try and fish you and see if you wanted to get in on the forum, cowhideandrubber.com. A lot of hockey and some baseball thrown in there as well. And you should also, listeners out there, be following Kyle on Twitter, at Kyle Roussel, KYLEROUSSEL. It's one of my favorite follows on Twitter as well. Thanks so much, and we'll be having you back on the 2-4 in no time at all, for sure.
Looking forward to it.
All right,
thanks
a lot, Kyle.
Very much.
Have a good one.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks once again to Kyle for coming on, chatting with us. And now we get into the point in the 2-4 where we take a look at the week ahead. And I've, the past few weeks, I've been taking a look on my phone with an old schedule that I didn't love, the app that I had. And I got a brand new app that I'm a much bigger fan of. I just wanted you to know that.
Look at you, bragging about your.
I'm not bragging about the phone. I'm saying the app that I have is a much better app for taking a look at the schedule ahead.
Gotcha.
It was a bad one before, and now I like what we got. So let's take a look. Starting, and this is a weird week. We got tomorrow night, Friday night game, rare Friday night game, in Montreal against the Buffalo Sabres. Which, if you're one of these people who are still trying to figure out how the Habs can make the playoffs, this has got to be the biggest game of the season, right?
Well, I guess.
No, if you're still giving them a chance, they need to win this one, right?
They don't have a chance, so I'm not going to dignify that question with a response.
All right, I'm just trying to
build something up.
You're killing me, man.
I know. I can't even pretend to muster up the playoff, okay. The must-win enthusiasm for
so
that.
So let's look at it realistically, then, the way you and I are going to watch the Friday night game. What are you looking for in a game against the Buffalo Sabres?
Well, it's a division rival, even if there's not as much bad blood there as there is with, say, Toronto or Boston. Things did get pretty heated last time. So you got that.
Sunday night.
Sunday. We got Sunday, 6 o'clock start against Jersey. So no Hockey Night in Canada game this week.
Do we ever play the New Jersey Devils at a real hockey time and evening?
Yeah, they're always the most dull games.
They're either the Sunday afternoon, Saturday afternoon, Sunday night at 6, like it's Magical World of Disney. What? Like, apparently Marty Brodeur automatically gets a team that's going to be a little bit thrown off when he comes to Montreal.
Yeah, really, really strange. I don't get that at all. But, you know, Jersey in that sort of bottom end of the playoff mix, so they're looking for every, you know, 2 points they can get.
Let's
so
lose that one.
Steal one there.
Let's give 2 points to the Devils in hopes of getting the Leafs out of the playoffs.
fine by me. And then
no, I want Tuesday. That. I'm completely for that. Any team that's got a shot at the Leafs in knocking them out of the playoffs, let's do it.
And Tuesday we've got Mike Ribeiro and the Dallas Stars in town.
Meh.
And yeah, well, I'll tell you who I do want to watch in that one though.
Let me know. Who do you want to watch?
Jamie Benn's having a hell of a season for the Stars. He is fun to watch.
That's true. That's my whole comment.
Fair enough. And then fast-forwarding, we'll talk about this more next week, but
yeah.
Washington, Friday the 24th. And Florida Panthers, Sunday the 26th. So back-to-back Saturdays without a game. That's a really bizarre.
I've been looking at that point in the schedule for a couple months now and wasn't able to figure out what the hell's going on with that. Two Saturdays, no game.
Yeah, I can't. I don't know if I can ever remember that happening. It's really strange.
I don't think in my hockey watching career I've ever seen that happen. Weird season, a weird little bump in the season schedule that has us not playing on two consecutive Saturdays, let alone two Saturdays within the month. So which game are you looking forward to the most in that stretch?
Kind of the Dallas. None of them are really all that thrilling, but kind of the Dallas one just because it's someone I haven't seen five times already this year, so I've seen Buffalo, I've seen Jersey. I'm a little more excited to see the Stars in town.
Yeah, the last stretch, you know, obviously win over the Leafs, but even prior last week, Leafs, Carolina, Boston. As much as Carolina is an irrelevant team in terms of standings, and the same way Montreal is at this point, it was Kirk Muller's return and whatnot. That was a fun run, and especially considering the fact that Habs almost made it seem like they might make a push for the playoffs at that point. The week ahead doesn't bring a ton to the table in terms of excitement, but I meant to mention this earlier, and I just want to get your opinion on this. Let's look back to the fact that if anyone had any point on this season schedule sort of circled on the Habs roster, you got to think that back-to-back games, or not back-to-back in that the same nights, but one after the other, Carolina-Boston had to have meant something to Thomas Cabrelle, no?
Yeah, fair enough, but he was not good against Carolina.
That's what I wanted to get into. It definitely was.
You know, against Boston, he wasn't really one way or the other.
No, he was the normal Cabrelle, the unnoticeable, whom may have done a couple things that you thought, oh, that was good, but okay.
But he was really bad against Carolina, and he certainly lost a step. I mean, literally, he doesn't really have that burst anymore. He can't really seem to separate from anyone.
Well, I think I texted you that night against Carolina, or even the day after. It occurred to me watching, kind of culminating last season's run Cabrelle had with the Bruins in the playoffs, and the night against Carolina, which was an intense night for the Habs. The Habs played that game pretty well. Carolina, for a last place team, wanted that one as well. And it was clear that the game got to that second gear, that it was more or less a playoff game for both teams in some respect. And I said, it feels like Cabrelle in regular season play, and which is all you got to see him do with the Leafs because they don't make the playoffs, in regular season play, he's completely serviceable to beyond serviceable. He's good at what he does. He feeds guys. He makes plays happen that perhaps you don't notice. But Cabrelle has no second gear, and when the game takes it up a notch, he falls behind. Am I wrong in that?
Not at all, and he's certainly getting a reputation around the league, deservedly so, as someone who sort of shrinks from the spotlight. And when we were talking last week, I believe it was, about, you know, is anyone maybe going to make a move for Cabrelle, I think that's the main reason that teams would stay away, is that he doesn't give off the impression of a guy who's going to bring the ruckus in the playoffs.
No, he's a regular season guy, and maybe even a good regular, or not great, but very, very decent regular season guy whose assist numbers are always going to impress you, in that you don't think he contributes that much, and then you look at the score sheet, and suddenly Cabrelle is racking up the assists that you didn't see coming, and he's quiet that way, and maybe we've underrated him a little bit for that, but when you see in games in which the chippiness comes in which you have to go and find that little bit extra in you, he doesn't have it.
No, and, you know, like you said, there's the fact that he just doesn't seem to raise his game when it matters. And B, he just looks slower than he used to.
Yeah, he does.
He can, you know, he's still got the vision, he's still got the hands, he can still make some nice passes. You know, he can sort of pick and choose his spots that way, but he gets blown away sometimes. He looks slow out there.
And case in point, I mean, it could be argued that the guy who lost us the game against Carolina was Cabrillé completely.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. That was that might have been the worst game I've seen by a Montreal defenseman this season.
This season? I give you that, actually. I don't disagree. All right.
Off the top of my head, at least.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, maybe somebody could point at something else, but off the top of my head, I'm with you on that one. All right, let's get in the 3 stars. I'll go first this week. I feel like I put it on you a lot. My 3rd star, le 3ème étoile, mostly for the grin he had as he settled into his place in the penalty box. Ryan White, glad to have you back. You're hockey through and through, bud. Great fight. That hair, the missing teeth, the look on your face. I hope the Habs keep you for a while. I know there's a lot to come from Ryan White. Even if it isn't productivity, there's something there. Ryan White's my 3rd star. Oh, come on. He had a great game against the Bruins.
Productivity. I like that.
No, but, I mean, he's not going to give you numbers like crazy. But at the same time, he will score a few goals. But Ryan White brings an edge to a team.
Yeah, I suppose.
What, are you trying to disagree with me?
No, it's your star. You can do what you want. I'm not the world's biggest Ryan White fan.
You're not the world's biggest Ryan White fan. Did you not? You didn't love Ryan White the other night? When he's sitting in the box, he's got the missing tooth and the hair flying wild, and he just got in that fight?
No, he's a likable guy. I'm just not entirely sure what he brings to the table.
I just explained to you what he brought to the table. He's got a missing tooth and hair flying all over and a grin on his face.
Fair enough.
I'm all about the immeasurables. Not a word.
Those are great intangibles.
Intangibles. One of us is an English major. Not the one who comes up with the right word. All right, let's hear your 3rd star.
All right, for my 3 stars this week, I went in a bit of a different direction just because...
What did you name? 2 events?
No, all Habs players, but...
Good for you. Not two events.
There's only so many times I can say... Eric Cole's really good. So I'm going to go with a couple players who maybe I've given them a star or two over the course of the season, but they've kind of flown under the radar. So my 3rd guy is David Desharnais, who's still plucking away.
Sorry, I'm just going to jump in before you go here. There's one guy that we've completely not given enough stars, and so I applaud you for this one. Well-deserved. We have overlooked this guy.
Yeah, and I think I've said this before, but you know, he's not a cute little Rudy-esque story anymore. He's a legitimate NHL player. He's, you know, if you can get a guy like that on your 3rd line who pumps in 15 goals a season and plays with energy, it doesn't cost you very
much.
He's
our first-line guy right now, though.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. But, I mean, he's, you know...
Our first line.
Yeah, exactly. He's more of a natural, you know, 2nd or 3rd liner, probably 3rd liner, to be frank. But if you can get a guy like that on your 3rd line for, you know, probably close to the league minimum... And he has a spark off the bench, you know, fan favorite, favorite in the locker room. He's a really nice piece to have, so he gets my 3rd star.
I like that. I don't even know if Desharnais is going to star from either of us all season.
I don't know if he has either.
Our diehard 2-4 fans might be able to check the tape and be able to... I don't think it has, and considering he's got the 3rd most points on the team right now, that's a miss by us. David, sorry. My 2nd star, and a guy who I thought was going to be my 1st star, but is a 2nd star, who actually received less than I thought this year from me, Carey Price. Perhaps not a juggernaut against the Bruins, but what he's done over the course of the last time we spoke on this podcast, Carey Price reminded me of what Carey Price has in store for us yet, it's hard to knock this guy. As I was saying when I was watching the Boston game on Wednesday night, there's not a goalie in the NHL right now who just plays the position as perfectly. Perhaps not the best, and there's guys clearly having better seasons, but he just does what he's supposed to do in that position like no one else that I can honestly say I've ever seen before. And that's what kind of brought up what we talked about before in the podcast. You know he at some point has that season where it's just going to work, if not a few seasons. To say just one season might be undercutting the guy. It's just going to work. And the last couple of weeks, we got a little taste of what Price still has in store and what, when things go well, he has ready for us. He's my second star of the week, and very deservedly so. I think he could be an NHL, one of the top there, three stars of the week. Yeah, that's all I've got to say about Carey. Keep calm and Carey.
Yeah, he's been on fire lately, and like you said, it really is the perfect mix of sort of technique and athleticism. He's very technically sound. He's never really out of position, doesn't give up those big juicy rebounds. He's a very smart goalie, but at the same time, he's just, you know, he's got great size, he's got great reflexes,
he can makes make it
those
look
crazy
so
highlight
easy.
Reel saves when he needs to. He is really the complete package in that sense.
The thing is, I find sometimes you don't quite appreciate it if you're not watching Carey day in and day out, is the fact that he's one of these guys, and I think you see it more in baseball, the comparison you'd make, these hitters who look like they're not really swinging, and then so much comes out of it. Carey Price is one of these guys who makes it look effortless. He never, or rarely, let's say, makes the save that's going to take the highlight of the night. Once in a while, he still does have that in his back pocket. But more so than that, he just plays the position so perfectly. All right, let's hear your first, bud.
I haven't even said my second yet.
Oh, he's second. Sorry, I got carried away. I got so excited
second
about how good my second star was.
Might be the last time I'll mention this guy as a member of the Habs. It's Hal Gill. And again, going with the theme of sort of underappreciated players, he has lost a step this season, actually, if we're going to be honest. He hasn't been quite as good.
No, you're right.
But he's still a savvy vet, and there's a reason that his name is being floated out there, and there's a reason that Boston wants him, Pittsburgh wants him, and maybe a couple other teams want him as well. So
teams that have had him. I think that speaks to it, too.
Yeah, I do as well. He's obviously very well liked, and like you said, the fact that, and you know, maybe Toronto's interested in him too, who knows, but the fact that teams who had him are interested in him again just speaks to you know, he's a great glue guy, he's a great rock room guy, but you know, beyond that, he's going to give you something on the ice in April and May, especially on the penalty kill, and he's been good for Montreal. He hasn't been quite the same player, but let's give him credit for another solid season from a guy who's really a consummate pro.
Now, I don't know if you're going to match me on my first star, and it wouldn't surprise me if you do. Though there's a guy who I left off the list, a few guys I left off the list this week, and this is the first week, strangely enough, that I think I could have gone across the board all Habs easy, because there's been points in the season where it's been hard. But my first star, to the guy that gives me the most hope going forward that's not named Carey Price, and this includes PK Subban, Max Pacioretty. What a season he's having, all things considered. Scoring against Boston, a team that hates Max, especially for getting his neck broken against them. We're the classless ones, though, in Montreal. Whatever. No, that's Max Pacioretty is my first star of the week. The guy's at 24 right now. He's hot once more. As we said earlier in the 2-4, I expect he'll hit 30. It's been a while since anybody's hit 30 with any confidence. I think Michael Ryder was the last with 30.
Kobe
had 36. Yeah, Kobe had that season. So Kobe Ryder with 30, but Patches has had somehow a quiet 30. We talked about a little bit last week that he's actually amongst the top goal scorers in even strength, amongst names that you just salivate at having. Patches is really, really impressed me. I can't wait to see what he's got going forward. And as we said last week, even if his ceiling is what we're seeing right now, that's not bad. He's my first star, no question. And even last night, he didn't shy away. He doesn't. In fact, he seems to seem best against the Bruins, to speak to what you said earlier with the Chara hit. I'm convinced with Patches in the lineup, Montreal beats Boston last season in the playoffs.
That's not insane. Obviously, there's not much difference between the two teams.
One goal.
Good first star. My first star is the again, sticking with the same theme, the sort of definition of a under-the-radar guy, Josh Georges, the ultimate glue guy, the ultimate team player. His contributions to the team are never going to really show up on the stat sheet unless you're looking at hits and block shots, but even then, that doesn't tell the whole story. And he's, you know, not a number one defenseman probably, but if he's your number two or three guy, he's
number one in the locker room, though.
Exactly, and I think if and when Brian Gionta heads out of town, I think it's pretty much almost established at this point that he's your next captain of the Canadiens.
I get the sense Gionta was at least, if not definitely, going to be moved at the deadline. There was going to be considerable conversations happening about moving Gionta at the trade deadline if he hadn't got hurt, with Georges ready to take over the captain role. We'll see what happens, and I keep almost forgetting that Gionta is even on this team at this point, despite being the guy that I absolutely love, and Gionta is one of my favorites over the last couple seasons. But you're right. Georges is the captain going forward. Georges does all those little things, and for when you find yourself at a point in the season that we have ourselves in now, where, you know, you're looking for these things to build on, Josh Georges is a complete worthy captain and a complete worthy first star. So, well chosen. You really went for the under radar right across the board, eh?
I did. Like I said, I got tired of going Gary Price and Eric Cole and Max.
Okay,
Petr,
but
let's
get to Cole, because neither of us put him in the top three this week in our stars, and that's only because we've exhausted that point. Honorable mentions to both Eric Cole, obviously, and I'm sure there's people listening to this podcast who can't believe we didn't give Eric Cole a star in the six opportunities we had. But the other one I would have to say is Matthew Darche is playing out of his fucking mind right now.
Yeah, he's been good for a guy who's really actually, I mean, I can't say he's disappointing me this season, because he is Matthew Darche. Like, he's a replacement level player.
No, I'm with you. I know what you're saying, though.
He hasn't been great, but no, he's been good there. He's been more the sort of player that we've seen the past couple seasons.
Against Boston, Darche was, and Carolina as well, and as Kyle said, maybe he's playing because he realizes his entire NHL career is on the line right now, and so he decided to give it everything. But Darche has been great. He gets an honorable mention. And Eric Cole, in any realistic week, I think we both would have put Cole on there, but we've both given Eric Cole so many applause all season. But I think we both decided to see, you know, let's go off the table. But Cole's goal against Boston on Wednesday, I mean, it was almost slow motion, and you could tell it sunk Tim Thomas in his Tea Party heart a little bit just to give up that slow motion goal he did to Cole.
And Cole was just absolutely on fire against Carolina. You could tell he wanted that.
Oh, he wanted
bad.
It. So, well, by his celebration, he wanted it so bad. I think we both kind of, I know we've both given Cole, has there been a week, maybe one in the entire season, we didn't give Cole a star? And perhaps, strangely enough, in the grand scheme of things, this past week between podcasts is probably the week Cole's deserved it most.
Yeah, he's been great. And he's, much like Camilleri before him, it's nice to see a guy who enjoys playing in Montreal and sort of relishes the pressure.
He does, he does. Now, one more thing before we go, Sean, if I may. Drop a douche!
What was that one?
It was me coming at you with an aggressive drop a douche.
Oh.
It was an aggressive one.
It was. My douches of the week are the
plural. I didn't know we agreed to dropping more than a single douche.
The Montreal fans who felt it necessary to boo, that is, Yaroslav Svacek. And
okay. Yep.
I was personally offended by Svacek getting booed, but this is something that's driven me crazy for a couple of years now, is we don't need to boo every single player who's left town.
Especially not someone as likable as Yaro.
A trade.
No.
He didn't sulk his way out of town. He didn't go on ESPN to announce that he was taking his talents to Raleigh Durham. He got traded. Although that would have been the best.
That would have been amazing. He would be my favorite player ever.
He just got traded, and you know, he wasn't great in Montreal. I didn't love the guy, but we can't just boo him because he got traded. And it's something that Montreal fans always do, unless it's Saku Koivu or maybe Alex Kovalev. They boo any former Hab who returns to town, and I think you have to do it, you know, depending on the situation. Michael Komisarek deserves to get booed every single time he steps on the Bell Center ice.
Michael Komisarek deserves to get booed in every room he enters for the rest of his life.
Exactly. So I have no problem with you booing him, or even, you know, a Michael Ryder type guy or a Mike Ribeiro. But
yeah, exactly.
Yaroslav Svacek didn't do a single thing wrong. He just got traded. It happens. The guy, I think, deserved a warm welcome from the Bell Center faithful, not the opposite.
He's a very likable guy. I think he came a little short of what we expected in that crazy offseason. But you're right. There's no need to boo Spacek, who seemed like nothing but the nicest guy. Reputation-wise, only Teemu Selänne seemed to be more liked in the NHL. Don't boo Spacek. The guy got traded. He might get traded again in the next 2 weeks. There's no need for that. I agree. Douchebags, boo Spacek.
Zachary Sivanos?
Yes?
It's now your turn to drop a douche.
And I had many douches prepared this week. I had many of them backed up and ready to drop, so to speak. And I'll be honest, Brad Marchand was my guy until a couple hours before we decided to record this podcast, until I came across a quote from a former Montreal Canadian who probably rightfully deserved every boo in the house if Zdeno Chara wasn't so busy occupying that space. But Benoit Pouliot is my douche of the week for two reasons. One, Pouliot scored a hell of a goal against the Canadiens. No doubt he scored a hell of a goal on Wednesday night. That was a fantastic... It showed everything that Pouliot has in his wheelhouse goal. But for that reason alone, I'm dropping the douche on him because...
Yeah.
Do you remember, honestly, seeing him with that much get up at any point in the two seasons he played in Montreal?
Yeah, I do, because you would see it every games when you decided to give a crap.
Eight, that's being nice.
Yeah, that's being
24
nice.
Is the realistic number.
No, there was always those flashes of him deciding to give a shit on a particular night. But
exactly.
And it was few and far between, and that's what made him so frustrating.
Which makes him a douche in and of itself. But on top of that, after the game, Benoit Pouliot decides... The Habs fans for cheering when Zdeno Chara takes a puck in the face. His assessment of Montreal Canadiens fans after the game is, it was gutless. Is there any person playing in the National Hockey League right now who is any less right to use the word gutless than Benoit fucking Pouliot against a team that actually took a chance on him? I'm sorry, Pouliot. Gutless is how I would underline your entire career. Even though I know we had the expletive chant on this, I'm going to drop out. But I went through the roof when I heard Benoit Pouliot use the word gutless to describe Habs fans describing a little bit of blood from their 9'9" fucking defenseman. Benoit Pouliot, gutless is you, buddy.
It is funny to hear Benoit Pouliot get up on his high horse and finally take a stand for something, because he's never... really decided to put any pride into his play on the ice. But,
I feel like the guy votes in any election with undecided. He just fucking marks every ugh. Gutless from Benoit Pouliot. Yeah, clearly I wasn't happy with that.
Clearly not. I liked it. You're fired up, ready to go.
I was. It's Benoit Pouliot. Like, if anyone's going to bring nothing to the table and show nothing when it matters, it's Pouliot. If I'm fine with I don't like Andrew Ferentz. I don't like Thornton. But those guys have every right to the word gutless. They really do. Because every night they do bring it, even if I don't like what they bring to the table. Benoit Pouliot, you just happen to have been signed to a team that happens to have some character. You yourself, sir, are the definition of gutless. So don't go calling Habs fans gutless because Zdeno Chara took a puck in the face about 12 months after he'd nearly killed a member of the Habs, and fans in Montreal happened to applaud it. You are gutless, Benoit Pouliot. You're not allowed to use that word for anybody else.
Very fair, and I apologize for the bit of background noise there. I was logging on to ESPN to see, just out of curiosity, what kind of numbers Guillaume Latendresse is putting up, but of course he's been kind of hurt all season, so it's a bit of a moot point.
Still nothing happening, eh?
No, it must be a season-long thing. I've kind of lost track of where he was at, but he had 9 points through 16 games before he hurt whatever it is he hurt.
Another concussion symptoms?
I want to say back, but I don't know. This is great journalism.
Poor. We never claimed to be anything but. All right, that'll wrap us up, right?
On that unresearched note.
All right, let's get out of here. And as the Arcade Fire, which proves I'm a couple of drinks into this podcast, as the Arcade Fire plays us out, thank you, Sean.
Thank you, Zach.
And we got the podcast clearly up on there. We got a forum coming up. And what do you got planned in the pipeline?
Well, it's been a while since I've sort of taken the temperature.
You've been shit in a while, bud.
I know. I know, but I'm coming back with a vengeance soon.
Are you? What do you got?
Got some power rankings that'll
Ooh,
be making.
Ooh, Mighty Morphin Power later. Rankings. Excellent. Once again, a big thanks to Kyle for chatting with us. Follow him on Twitter at Kyle Russell. And also, cowhideandrubber.com is the site that he posts regularly on. Great site, not just for Habs stuff, but once baseball season comes around, big, obviously, what you saw tonight. We're all Expos fans here, and I don't want to drop any hints on folks, but you and I maybe have something in the works for the baseball season coming up that relates to the Expos.
That is a fact.
Stay tuned.